For a moment I considered whether I had gone blind during the night and whether the grain of sand was not sand at all but a curious and sudden eye infection. I groped around but could not feel the bed. This was confusing. When I got up I noticed a strange absence of body weight which told me that I had woken in my subtle body, while physically I was still asleep. I focused all my energy on regaining my vision and slowly the room began to emerge like out of a dark mist. I moved around until my surrounding was established in all its reality. I saw Julia lying in bed talking to herself in her sleep. I wasn't sure what level I was on because my physical body had vanished from her side. I decided to slip back into physical consciousness to find out what was really happening. When I did so, I found my wife fast asleep, not talking. I entered the second state again and almost instantly I heard Julia talking in her sleep again, laughing and being silly. I darted back to my physical body only to discover that she was quiet. I decided I would get more out of this experience if I ventured out of the house and investigated the other world and its possibilities. Outside it was raining, and I noticed with curiosity that I could feel the light drizzle on my skin as I hovered under a streetlight. My perception was not good, it began to dim and my mind became dull. I was afraid of falling asleep and began chanting my mantra. In an instant I shot into the night sky like Superman. I experienced an invigorating sense of power and strength. I knew I could stop the rain, and I did. My power was such that I could turn the rain on and off like a tap. In the physical reality it rained all that night, and I had only used my mantra once. When I used it for the second time I shot up through the clouds like a rocket. I hovered momentarily above the clouds, which glowed in the light from the town below. Above me was a starlit sky. The third time I used my mantra, its stupendous power accelerated me into deep space. The further I traveled, the greater the pleasure I felt. There was no stopping me now. The mantra gave me total assurance and protection. I felt safe and I traveled through space with the greatest ease, exhilarated by a freedom unknown before. Then, without warning, I hit a barrier in the middle of space. When I looked, I found enormous flower petals, miles in diameter, pulsating and breathing and impregnable. I had come to a full stop. I considered using my mantra, but something told me that this was the end of my journey, a natural imitation. I decided to return to my body to consider my options. Back in my bed, I didn't bother to seek physical waking and I heard Julia shouting and laughing. Evidently her dream was still in progress and it must have been very amusing. I went through all the meditation techniques I had practiced over the years and finally went outside again. There was traffic on the road. A lorry came thundering towards me and I escaped to the roof. My awareness became sluggish. I was afraid of drifting into a dream. To establish full waking consciousness, I focused on my hand as I had done many times in the past, but I had no body. Only with great eye concentration did it start to emerge. My hands first, appearing like eye maggots out of eggs, forming into embryonic visions. Finally they looked human. From the roof I went back into my room, still focusing on my hands, while fighting against the blurriness of my vision. Gradually the room brightened up and I could make out the pattern of the wallpaper, which was odd, because our physical flat was painted plainly with emulsion. I realized that I was on another level. I noticed also that a variety of strange emotions were drifting through me like a circus procession. They didn't seem to belong to me. With detachment I watched them marching through me and away. I decided it was time to meet the barrier. I was already on another level and thought it should be easier to get higher this time. I only made it to the ceiling, not even the roof. Again I was flower petal and nothing I could do would move it. I sank into my bed and then into my body. I surrendered from the battle and felt strangely peaceful. Gradually a deep inner contentment filled my whole being. I was, I existed, I am. There was nothing to aim for, nothing to gain. There were no mountains to climb, There was no space to conquer, there was only the eternal peace of the present. I am. Next headline, Barriers and Obstacles, 2nd of September 1979. This had been a frustrating and challenging time. My wife was 7 months pregnant and we had just moved into our first proper home, a modest terraced house. I was earning a living working in a small advertising. That morning I had left my body several times during meditation but had come back just as quickly. Using the force of natural desire, I focused on my mother's house in Germany. Suddenly I was Tom out of my body and catapulted through the air so swiftly that I didn't know what had hit me. Instead of being taken to the front garden of her house as I had expected, I was catapulted into a deep black abyss. It was as if I was traveling lower tunnel miles in diameter. For a moment I considered what the outcome would be if I had the courage to allow myself to be dropped into this awesome void, whether I would come out of it alive. I had no guarantee that this would not be my final moment, my life sealed with a spectacular drop into a black abyss. I felt the risk was too great and instead decided to chant my mantra to take control. I was Tom out of the hole instantly and tossed into the air like a ball. I clung stubbornly to my mantra, refusing to be the subject of some natural or unnatural force wanting to take control of me. Gradually my movements calmed down and instead of being Tom and kicked, I was blown and rocked gently like a feather in a mild summer's breeze. But still I had no control. Whether it was the mantra that was the primal automotive force or some other power, I wanted to be the one to decide where I would go. So I made a powerful effort of will to rise as high as I could in order to penetrate the next higher dimension. I rose higher, but then I hit a sudden barrier. I saw an intricate, richly ornate ceiling. If it hadn't caused my sudden dead end, I would have enjoyed looking at the ceiling, but anyway, that wasn't why I was here. No matter how hard I pushed, the ornate barrier did not move. I tried to employ my mantra, but it was no use. I cried for help and assistance, but I was on my own. No matter what I tried, the ceiling was solid, stretching infinitely carat across the sky. There was no way around or through it. I became frustrated and then angry until I cried. I sobbed like a child. The barrier agency and was struggling to acclimatize to the new commitments and responsibilities. The largest room in the house was put aside for a studio where I could pursue my love of painting, while at night and in the early hours of the morning I tried to keep up my spiritual quest by practicing meditation. I was astonished by the power of my emotion and the hurt, the kind of which I hadn't experienced since early childhood when I first realized that I could not control the world and then exploded into a tantrum. Emotionally exhausted, I woke up in my body. I felt disappointed and let down for the rest of the day. Next headline, a fight to the death. 3rd of September 1979. Again I found myself out in the open with a firm commitment to make it into the next higher dimension from where I was. I chanted my mantra and rose high into the blue sky instantly. Without warning I hit the obstacle so hard that I feared losing my consciousness. I then remembered that Robert Munro VII had encountered similar obstacles, but I could not recall how he overcame them. Anyhow, this was different. This obstacle jeopardized my spiritual future. It reminded me of my limitations. It put my integrity and character into question. It challenged my strength and wisdom. I kept pushing, banging against it, trying to find a weak spot. But it was as hard as rock. I chanted the mantra pathetically, but all my power was soaked up with frustration. I felt insulted, then sad about my lack of control. While probing and pushing against the ceiling, I became aware gradually of the nature of the barrier and concluded that it was a psychological barrier, a flaw in my character. I did not have to search long before becoming aware of my overbearing self-importance and vanity. It was as if it was written right across the barriers. Other unsavory character traits stared at me as if from a mirror. I saw all the things about myself I would never have suspected. I cringed when I imagined how obvious they must have been all along to other people. I felt ashamed and pitied myself for my weaknesses, which were all dancing in front of my eyes, sneering at me, mocking and ridiculing me like demons released from captivity. Instead of feeling guilt and remorse, I felt resentful. I refused to claim them, denied myself ownership of them. I knew it was hopeless to get past them, but instead of showing humility, I became angry. My anger and cowardice was mocked as I turned away and darted down into the abyss towards my body. I woke up in my physical body but kept my eyes closed. I needed closure and wanted to return. When I opened my non-physical eyes again, I was standing at the bottom of a large stony Gothic staircase with black iron rails. At the top of the stairs was a heavy wooden door. I had a sense of foreboding, a feeling of impending doom. I climbed the stairs hesitatingly, haltingly, step by step, until suddenly I knew what was behind the door. Next headline, it was death. Not just any old death you could rationalize or philosophize away, but real death, physical and spiritual death, the destruction of my body, mind and soul, the pain and the anguish of the people I would leave behind, the daughter who hadn't even been born yet, the shock and horror of the people who would say that only a few hours ago they had spoken to me and seen no signs of illness. But the greater death would be the one which only I would notice. It was death that would cut everything short, my dreams, my ambitions, everything I had nurtured for this life of only 33 years. It was the end for all the pictures I wanted to paint and the things I wanted to do, and the family I wanted to raise. It was also the death of my spiritual being. There was still time to turn and run. But then I noticed with horror that every step of the staircase had death carved into it. It was already too late. Death knew that I was coming and it was waiting for me. I stopped, frozen with fear. Then I became angry. "How dare you," I shouted as I stormed up the stairs. "How dare you provoke me? How dare you confront me and stop me?" At the top of the stairs I threw open the door, and there he was, sitting on a chair, hideous, mean and motionless, staring me in the face, pinning his hideous eyes on me, trying to force me to submit. With all my power I screamed and hurled myself at the figure, knocking him off his perch. We tumbled down the stairs, me screaming and punching, him laughing. We slammed against the ground at the bottom of the stairs. I was still punching and kicking him when I woke up in the physical world, weak and trembling. I tried to analyze it rationally, recalling Freud and Jung. I began to speculate whether I had killed the demons of my character who had mocked and humiliated me. I hoped I had, but I wasn't sure. I felt humbled, but not defeated. On this occasion I was having a dream, driving in an old Volkswagen through a strange and unfamiliar town on the lookout for something or somebody but unsure of what exactly. The sky was dark and thundery and it felt like it was going to rain at any moment. As I drove into the town the scene began to brighten. To my delight I noticed parts of the sky becoming lighter. I decided to stop the car. Next headline, mysterious silver cords and more natural barriers. 25th of May 1980. Changes between ordinary dreams and lucid dreams can be gradual. The only thing that changes is the consciousness. At the moment of awakening, two things may happen. Dream content is stripped away suddenly, leaving me with a normal awareness of reality, or dream content does not change at all, only my awareness. I know that skeptics may never be convinced. I am sure there is plenty of speculation that all that happens is an abnormal brain function which creates awareness in a dream, hence a lucid dream. But one thing that others as well as myself have noticed during travels out of the body, is that there exists a link to the physical body in the form of a thin luminous fibrous string, often referred to as the umbilical or silver cord. Although I have not always been aware of it when having a lucid dream, on many occasions I have. Is this physical evidence enough to prove that we are in another dimensional environment, attached to the real world by a communication cord, rather than in a dream resulting from unusual brain activity? Occasionally I have experienced a violent pull from the cord which has yanked me back into the physical body, experiencing a movement through space and even time. In order to find out where I was, there were no people in the street, and when I parked my car in front of a house I decided I would go in. At that moment my mind became very clear and jolted me into full wakefulness. I was delighted. The fact that my dream had assumed a dimension of reality overwhelmed me immediately with excitement. I was allowed to do as I please. Still, I decided to enter the house, and without knocking I went in. I was greeted by two young women who seemed to be pleased to see me. Their demeanor was very friendly and pleasant. I introduced myself and asked their names. One was called Clara and the other was Glenn. I tried to explain to them, rather clumsily, that I did not really belong to their world, as they were so obviously dead while I was still in possession of a physical body. They found my comment rather amusing and said that it was quite obvious that I was alive as I was attached to the luminous cord. It was only then that I spotted, to my great astonishment, that I had been dragging a cord around with me which came literally out of the center of my body and disappeared into the ground. It consisted of two very fine lines of some my kind of electric blue energy, intertwined and pulsating like electric wire, though much less solid. I felt a current passing through it. One of the girls touched it when she pointed it out, and I felt a tingling sensation in my stomach. They both burst out laughing at my reaction. Their cheerfulness was infectious. I felt in a silly mood. I grabbed the cord with one hand and placed my foot on the end where it came out of the floor and proceeded to pluck at it like a bass player. I made bass sounds with my mouth. Soon the girls were in stitches. When the burst of entertainment came to an end, we started to talk. They confirmed that they knew they were dead, but when I asked where we were in relation to the physical world, they appeared uncertain. They said they would ask their friend who was more interested and knowledgeable in these matters, and almost instantly their friend appeared in the room. Meanwhile, I became more and more distracted, looking out of the window. Instead of questioning the new girl, I became more interested in making gentle somersaults in the air. It seemed to amuse my audience. I explained that this was such a relatively rare event that I needed to take full advantage of it and explore their world by myself, and with this I passed effortlessly through the window and out into the street. The girls followed, obviously intrigued by what folly I would come up with next. I then remembered that the whole point of being in this state was to capitalize on it by using my meditation practices, namely chanting one of my powerful mantras. On this level these mantras really had power and their effect was instantaneous. As soon as I completed the first chant I shot up exhilaratingly into the air, leaving everyone standing and looking up at me. Then I descended gently to earth. The next chant took me even higher until the bright blue sky turned dark indigo. I rose higher and higher until I struck the familiar ornate ceiling. I felt like a fly stuck in a gigantic spider's web made from millions of intricate luminous fibers. In the center of the ceiling was a gigantic pattern like a huge lotus flower. I knew I had to go through that gate, but I didn't know how. In my frustration, I decided to wake up in my body. Next headline, Ancient Masters. I had experienced so much, but now I was keenly aware of my limitations. I was on the threshold of a world which was far greater than I had hitherto explored. I knew beyond doubt that there were even more extraordinary worlds out there, dimensions that lay at the heart of all human dreams and desires. I was frustrated by the fact that I had no means with which to penetrate deeper. I needed help. All I could do was stick to my meditation routine. I had grown tired of reading books on anything to do with spirituality and yearned for first-hand knowledge. I had no time for teachers, authors, religions, philosophies or anything spiritual at all. I measured everything by an experience I had had many years ago which I am about to relate, one which told me that the only guidance I could trust had to come from within myself. So far, meditation had given me a means to connect, had given me sovereignty and confidence and inspiration. Ideas were no substitute for experience. I knew ideas, whether scientific, religious or philosophical, never worked in the long run and were too static to adapt to the reality of a universe in a state of continual change. It was this ever-changing reality of the now which I found most attractive in life. The uncertainty and the adventure it harbored. It was the heartbeat of my life. Reality was my key mantra. The idea of God was unacceptable because it was burdened with other people's meanings. Despite rejecting anything that I considered external, I had yearned secretly for some direction for a long time now, but it had to be first-hand, unprocessed, authentic and original. But yearn as I might, I received nothing from within. 76 In my meditation I tried to unite the observer with the observed, to gain singularity and the exalted state of consciousness, which I knew to exist because I had experienced it once before when it had taken hold of me. It had walked beside me as a silent presence ever since. When this presence entered my life, I had been meditating for several years while studying fine art in Hamburg in the early 70s. Every morning I got up at the crack of dawn and spent an hour in meditation, half an hour practicing yoga asanas, and then another 2 hours in meditation. I established a routine of 4 to 5 hours each day for nearly a year, but nothing happened. Inside was darkness, no revelations were forthcoming, and most of the time I struggled to overcome other thoughts and fought against sleep. In the end I became irritable, frustrated to the point of resentment and anger. I decided to drop my whole meditation lark as a pointless fantasy and instead devoted all my time to enjoying my student life to the full. I lived in a small student flat at that time. My ascetic lifestyle was replaced by a modest form of hedonism, limited only by the fact that I was quite poor. Every Wednesday, across the road from where I lived was a small market. I made it a habit to buy bread, cheese and fruit there. I was particularly fond of the fresh, slightly sour rye bread and the strong till cider cheese, which I bought every week from the same woman. It became a ritual to brew myself a big mug of very strong black coffee and tuck into bread with cheese for breakfast before going to college. This morning was no exception. I cut 2 inches off tire end of my loaf of bread and without buttering it, topped it with a half-inch slice of cheese. I tucked into my feast like a starving caveman, slurping the hot black coffee from my huge mug. I enjoyed the fact that nobody was watching and that I was able to satisfy my appetite in the way only animals knew how. Then, when I launched into a massive second bite, something extraordinary happened. I became aware. I lowered my sandwich. I felt as if someone had switched off time. I saw how crude I looked stuffing my face and satisfying my base instincts. I had lost my relationship with my sandwich and my mug of coffee. 77 I lowered my cup. Somehow it did not belong to me anymore, nor did my hands. It all belonged to someone else. Then there was underscore. Stillness, like a warm blanket, but it had a presence. It spoke to me without words, the you are. It was not a voice. It was an acknowledgement that I existed. It welcomed me to join every other atom in the universe. Until now, I had never considered one simple fact: I was. The noise from the traffic outside my window had stopped. Everything, the whole world, was quiet, as if to draw attention to this moment. This stillness was not merely an absence of sound, it was stillness which told me, I am the stillness which allows sound to be if it pleases me. It was a stillness which was a presence, but it was not a life form. I am. I give life to everything. I give life to you. On understanding the profundity that I had been created, I was overwhelmed instantly by a huge wave of gratitude. I felt honored, and sanctified, privileged that I existed. But this was not all. Come to me and I will show you who you really are. I had no option of resisting, because the room around me filled with a blazing light. Everything burst into millions of atoms and rained down on me as an unbearable blessing. For a moment my body convulsed in ecstatic bliss, But then it was shed like a useless garment, and I stood clear and without any attributes in an inferno of ecstatic joy. Now there is nothing left of your being. With this realization booming through an infinite realm of beingness, the ecstatic joy was stripped from me as well, and then there was nothing. All that was left was an ocean of clarity. A cosmic sea of pure intelligence, the essence of being. You cannot grasp who I am, or who you are, and nor can you understand. We are both of the same, beyond understanding. Then everything stopped. There was nothing to describe what I had become aware of. It was neither good nor bad, neither love nor non-love. There was not an emotion or any feeling or thought that could be attributed to it. It was purely neutral. It was immeasurable clarity. That was 2 years before my first out-of-body experience, but the presence had remained with me ever since, though I have never experienced it as clearly as on that day. I began my meditation again shortly after, more in homage and to say thank you than to achieve anything with it. At times it would pop up unannounced and walk beside me. I acknowledged it without making a fuss and told no one. Sometimes it was on the ground, or the wooden fence I walked past. Sometimes it was the big heavy metal train and the rusty railway line. Always, it departed without great show. I knew it was there even if I couldn't see it. I dared not give it a name because it was too subtle, too fleeting, and yet it was everything there was. I dared not give it a thought in order not to taint it. 2 years later, the out-of-body events happened, a fluke of nature, never the objective of my meditation, a rather non-essential byproduct. This is truth. There is nothing else beside it. Nothing to attain and nothing to gain. Truth, clear and without attributes or purpose other than to be. Nothing else is real. For what seemed like hours I was, incredible vistas of being with billions of different nuances and appearances, all sprung from the same source. I was sucked deeper and deeper into an unbearable glory and then tossed out again to be told that all glory is an illusion. I took on the shapes of infinite diversity, spreading forever throughout the far-flung realms of creation, but it was just a dream compared to the clear light, which stood still and passionless, embracing and filling all forms. And at every moment I realized the stillness in everything, peaceful, kind, generous and loving and yet unknowable. The bright light began to mellow. It left a warm, extremely comforting and reassuring glow, not at all like the brilliant clarity which I had experienced before. My room descended into the darkness of the bright summer daylight. The atoms began to reassemble the S-world around me, including my body. I was back, but it wasn't me who was back. The other me, which was clinging to its tiny heap of broken flesh, fell onto the ground and cried like a small and helpless child. I stood beside it. "You are fine," I said to the child lying on the floor and sobbing inconsolably. "Everything will be all right." I was fascinated, obsessed even. It was as if fate had handed me a great adventure book to read. I had to explore. But now I was adrift, knowing neither where to proceed nor what to achieve. But I sensed that out-of-body journeys were a platform from which to travel within myself, to gain new insight and understanding, to reach new levels of awareness. I was on virgin territory and I did not know where to turn. I needed help. Finally, it came. Next headline, Meeting the Master. 18th July 1977. Early morning meditation, after working through what I describe as the goose state of consciousness, a trance-like semi-dream state, laden with heavy images and visions, my mind began to clear abruptly as I entered a state of great clarity. I was completely detached from my body, and I rose up into a brilliant blue sky while chanting my mantra. The force pulling me higher and higher was a strange combination of yearning and joy which I felt at rising into a heavenly sky. But it didn't last. No matter how hard I tried, I could not rise above a certain height. The frustration made me descend to the ground again, feeling abandoned and unworthy, excluded from the prospect of reaching beyond my limitations. When I abandoned these negative feelings and started focusing on the mantra again, I rose up once more, only to sink towards the ground with my concentration faltering.